Right now, I'd like to welcome Danny Katzman. He is a geologist at Los Alamos National Laboratories, where he is program manager in the Water Stewardship Program and project leader in the Chromium Project. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi.
It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Now, our subject tonight is chromium contamination in the groundwater. Chromium is known as a toxin. How did chromium get into the groundwater around Los Alamos?
Well, first of all, let me thank you for inviting me to be here to discuss this. Chromium actually gets into the groundwater at Los Alamos in a number of ways. There's operations throughout the laboratory, primarily back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, that used chromium in various plating processes. And but most importantly, the chromium that we're dealing with now is associated with its use as a corrosion inhibitor in power plants, and it actually keeps closed-loop water systems from scaling and operating functionally.
And so it's used in those processes. It's not being released into the atmosphere, into the local water systems anymore. Is that correct?
No, that's correct. The chromium that was released back in the 50s and 60s, some did actually get released into the air through stacks. Most of it was released in what's called outfalls. It was actually, interestingly enough, early perspectives on some of the potential health effects associated with chromium, even in the 70s, that caused them to stop using it. And as far as we can tell in our archival research, it appears that the chromium that was released, which was as a form called hexavalent chromium, ceased being released in about 1972.
So what was the path of the chromium when it left Los Alamos? I mean, it was dumped as part of liquid. It was dumped in water into a canyon?
That's correct. At Los Alamos, I think people are generally familiar here locally with the geography there. There's mesas and canyons. And in this particular case, the chromium that we're investigating now was actually released from a relatively large power plant that was operational in the very early days of the laboratory. And something on the order of about 200,000 gallons of water per day were released from the power plant, from the cooling tower system. And it contained something on the order of about 35 to 40 pounds of chromium in that 200,000 gallons released
every day.
That's
a lot of chromium.
That is a lot of chromium.
Over a period of, what, 20 years or so?
About 20 years. Again, it's a little hard to pin down the exact details, but it appears that the chromium was released from approximately 1956 to about 1972.
So you have a sense of the total amount that should exist somewhere in the vicinity of Los Alamos. So what was its path? How did it travel? How far has it gone?
Okay, well, the effluent, as it's called, that was released from this power plant actually creates, in this particular canyon, this is a canyon called Sandia Canyon, actually created a stream. And we describe that term as an effluent-supported stream that created continuous surface water flow for maybe about 4 miles down the canyon.
So a stream wouldn't have been there otherwise except for this effluent?
That's correct.
Okay.
It could be that there would have been, in the early days of the laboratory, small springs. There are springs located throughout the laboratory property, and but they certainly wouldn't have created a substantial stream. So the stream literally was an effluent-supported stream. And it appears that the stream was continuously flowing from the power plant, which is way up at the head of the canyon, the very far west end of the laboratory, and continued as a continuous surface flow for about 4 miles, where the stream channel and the sediment below the stream channel really starts thickening up, gets very thick, maybe on the order of 30 to 40 feet, and the stream soaks into the sediment down in that area.
So first it goes along the surface, which is not porous. Then it hits an area where there's a lot of sediment. It's porous. The water soaks into the ground, including the chromium.
Including the chromium.
Where does it go from there?
Well, backing up just a little bit, from the point of the release, the the surface water that contains the chromium in it certainly encounters features along the way that could cause some of the chromium to bind or stay in place. And in the upper part of Sandia Canyon, in fact, very close to the release site itself, is a wetland. It's a fairly large wetland. It's somewhere between about a half kilometer and maybe three quarters of a kilometer long. And that wetland contains, of course, like all wetlands, a large amount of organic material. And our records indicate, and early photos indicate, that wetland did exist to some degree at the time of the releases of chromium. And so some of that chromium would have started binding along this 4 mile or so surface water pathway, partially in the wetland. And then some of it clearly escaped that area and continued on down. And in this location, maybe about 4 miles downstream that we were describing, the chromium, as you pointed out, encounters more porous materials at depth in the geologic layers and starts soaking downward.
We're talking to Danny Katzman, geologist at Los Alamos National Laboratories, about chromium contamination in the local water. Now, it filters downwards. It then goes, what, straight into the aquifer? Does it take a path to get there?
Well, in this particular location in Sandia Canyon, there's a pretty complex hydrologic setting. There's the surface water, as we described. There's what we call an alluvial groundwater body, which is only about 30 feet down, and it's maybe 6 to 10 feet thick. So there's another perched groundwater body there, about 30 feet down. And then you start encountering a very complex geologic layering beneath that. And so the water infiltrates, kind of percolates very slowly through those layers, starts encountering other tighter, more less porous rocks at depth, and might perch again, creating another groundwater body, in this case maybe 350 feet down. Very thin, maybe on the order of 10 feet or so thick. Not necessarily continuous in a lateral sense, but locally kind of perched water, where it then starts finally working its way back through that layer down to around 800 feet, which is to the zone that we call our regional aquifer. It's the main drinking water supply for Los Alamos County. It's the main water supply for the laboratory as well. And so that groundwater body, certainly the one that we're most interested in with respect to the chromium, is at about 800 feet below the ground surface.
Now, how do you figure all of this out? When you talk about a type of contamination, a lot of people use the word plume. So there is a plume of chromium that... And what does that mean in terms of shape? What does that mean in terms of the front of it, the back of it? And how do you know how big that plume is?
That's a good question. It's largely derived from direct observations from monitoring wells. I mean, you can model the plume. You can do all kinds of things with kind of numerical modeling and using math and assumptions about how things move. And
but really, you got to dig a hole in the ground.
Yeah, and that is done. We do the modeling. It's an important way to see if you can essentially mathematically replicate direct observations in the field. And if you can, then you can start using the model to predict what the fate is going to be. But it's about drilling holes. Sometimes core samples are collected from the holes where you actually get samples of the rocks and sediments that you encounter down to 400 feet or so. And you can send those samples off to an analytical laboratory who sends back results with values for chromium and anything else you might be interested in. And then groundwater monitoring wells are placed in all three of those water zones that we've described earlier. And samples are collected from those as well.
Now, this chromium has been going from Los Alamos into the groundwater, into the surface water, the groundwater, and so on, for a good 50 years. How do you know, are you sure how far it's gone? Could it have gone to, Mexico, Arizona, Texas, or is it just in this local area?
Well, it's certainly still in the local area. I mean, groundwater environments typically have recharge locations, and we're actually describing one of them now. This is a if you will, sort of an unnatural, a non-natural recharge that we've created with this effluent where it soaks in. But there's also natural recharge areas, typically along mountain fronts. But there's also discharge locations. And in this case, the groundwater in the aquifer beneath Los Alamos generally discharges along White Rock Canyon into the Rio Grande.
Now, is there chromium that has been found in the Rio Grande? Have you looked there?
We have looked, and to date, we've not measured chromium concentrations that look different from background. I think it's important to kind of point out as a sort of a frame of reference here that there is naturally occurring chromium in groundwaters all over the world, and at Los Alamos as well. And we've been measuring the springs that represent the discharge of the deep groundwater into the Rio Grande. It's expressed as springs all along White Rock Canyon. And we've been measuring that for decades, and no chromium has shown above background at those locations to date.
Well, and then here's the big question is it in the drinking water, and how close is it to the drinking water?
Yeah, that's of course the most paramount question of all. And it's certainly these concentrations that we found here are in the same aquifer that the drinking water is from, and it has not been seen at concentrations above background in any of the water supply wells that are actually, all the water supply wells in the system there is owned by Los Alamos County. Some of the wells, though, happen to be within the laboratory property itself. So that's, of course, an issue and something we watch very closely, but we're doing quarterly monitoring for very comprehensive analyses at all of the water supply wells, and so far haven't seen any concentrations that look different from background.
Now, how close is the chromium that you have monitored in high concentrations?
Yeah, we've monitored, we have a location that we call monitoring well R28, and it's showing the highest concentrations that we've seen of all the wells. It's the highest. The concentrations there are between about 300 and 400 parts per billion, and it's about 3/4 of a mile up gradient, so up the groundwater flow direction from a nearby water supply well.
So it could flow downhill to the groundwater?
It absolutely could.
Now, let's keep in mind, 300 or 400 parts per billion is a lot higher than the legal limit of 50 parts per billion, the
That's
EPA
correct.
Set limit.
That's correct.
So that's a significant amount of chromium.
That is a significant amount of chromium. And it's certainly one of the reasons why the laboratory is taking this so seriously, and so is the State Environment Department, who is our regulator on this work. And there has been a considerable acceleration of the work and the investigations and kind of all of the regulatory steps that are normally done on investigations. That's been accelerated really by both parties in a very aggressive way to kind of get at a quick answer to whether or not this is a significant problem, and if so, what can be done about it.
Now let's step back for a moment, and we're not going to have a major chemistry class here on the radio, but I think it's important to talk about the fact that chromium is an element on the periodic table, but it does not appear as pure elemental chromium. It appears as a compound. Some chromium is found in your vitamin pills. That's the good kind of chromium. The chromium that's dissolved in the groundwater is a toxic kind of chromium.
That's correct.
What's the difference, and how do they get the way they are, the healthy kind and the toxic kind?
Well, those are typically referred to, the one that's considered an essential nutrient is a trivalent chromium, otherwise known as chromium-3. They're both types of chromium are generally found as chromium oxides, so they're complexed with hydrogen and oxygen. And I'm certainly not a geochemist, and so I hope you don't ask me too much detail
about
this. But the chromium that was released is released as a compound called chromate, and it's in the hexavalent or chrome 6 phase, so it is the more toxic of the two. And in the environment, hexavalent chromium, particularly in the presence of oxygen, is pretty typically, and in the presence of organic matter, pretty typically quickly converted to the trivalent and stable, less toxic, and essentially non-mobile form. And
so chromium comes out of the cooling water, cooling towers. It goes into the canyon. It hits a bunch of dirt and grass and the wetland you were talking about, and it turns into vitamins.
It turns into a vitamin mine. Yes, and some of that, and it becomes essentially relatively benign in the environment at that point.
But then some of it doesn't get absorbed. Some of it keeps going, and that's the stuff that you're worried about.
That's correct. And in the groundwater at Los Alamos, it's relatively stable as the hexavalent form and highly mobile and essentially moves close to at the same rate that the water itself moves.
So in terms of sticking with the two different kinds of chromium for a second, in terms of remediation of this situation, is there a way to, on purpose, as a scientist, transform the bad kind of chromium, the chromium 6, into the benign chromium 3 form?
There is, actually, and that's maybe one of the fortunate things that we'll have going for us if it comes to that in this project, is that chromium is quite treatable. It's what makes it a little bit difficult is in deep groundwater environments, certainly 800 to 1,000 feet below the ground, you can only know so much about how things are behaving. And you have points where you're evaluating it in monitoring wells, but you really have this kind of mystery zone in between where you don't really quite know what's happening in between. So,
yeah, because you can't dig an infinite number of wells.
Exactly. And so what's called in situ treatment, meaning treating the chromium problem in the groundwater itself, can be very complex for that reason. The technologies are there, but it just has inherent uncertainty associated with it. Some of the technologies involve injecting certain chemicals into the groundwater itself through maybe injection wells that might not look different from the monitoring wells themselves, and then making some assumptions about that injected chemical working its way through the aquifer, encountering the chromium plume, and converting it. So that has been done at some facilities, typically where groundwater is much, much shallower than our situation here at Los Alamos. But again, you're also left with a couple of uncertainties. How well did my injected chemical make it between all my injection points? And also, it leaves the uncertainty of long-term stability of that situation. You don't want to remediate a situation and have uncertainty as to whether or not, if you walk away 30 years from then, some kind of geochemical change occurs that makes the chromium go back into the hexavalent and mobile form. So you have to be very careful about that. Above ground treatment is actually quite straightforward and is done at places all over the country. So one option might be, for instance, to withdraw the groundwater from the ground and treat it at the surface before you reapply it to the delivery system itself. And that's actually very straightforward technology.
Why wouldn't you just treat it at the site of the drinking water supply?
You absolutely could. Yeah, you would probably want to treat it before it got too far into the system. And a lot of it depends also on the nature of your water supply system. Some wells might not mix with others. They might be kept, that water stream might be kept separate for certain communities and things like that. I know, for instance, in Santa Fe, some of the wells here produce uranium concentrations that are actually in exceedance of the EPA standards.
And that's naturally occurring uranium?
It's naturally occurring uranium. And the city deals with that by mixing the higher concentration water with low concentration water from other wells and end up delivering to the users concentrations that are below the standards.
So that's rather than trying to take out the uranium because that's too hard.
That's correct. Well, yeah, it might be ultimately. It's always kind of a trade-off between the cost and the benefits associated with those kinds of things.
We're talking to geologist Danny Katzman, who is with Los Alamos National Laboratory Water Stewardship Program. Let's talk about those wetlands that are nearby. As you mentioned, wetlands, which are full of organic matter, tend to absorb chromium, immobilize it, convert it to a more benign form. Do you expect, have you checked out those wetlands? Are they full of, you know, pounds or tons of chromium?
We've done some preliminary look at the concentrations of chromium in the wetland, and indications are that there is substantial chromium there. There are special tests that can be run to help you understand whether or not your chromium is as the benign version that we're describing here, chromium 3, or as the hexavalent. We've done those tests, and it's turning out it is all chromium 3. So there are some indications that potentially a substantial amount, maybe tons of chromium, still sits within that wetland. And that's the subject of a very intensive investigation that we've actually begun just here in the last couple of weeks.
Now, that will be going on through the summer. Do you know from looking at other environments or reading about other environments where things like this have happened, whether that much chromium in a wetland affects the local wildlife?
Well, that's absolutely one of the things that we'll be investigating. Part of all of these investigations include ecological assessments. It's interesting to think that if the chromium 3, the trivalent chromium, is essentially benign for humans, that it might be the same for the wildlife. But we won't be making any assumptions about that. We'll be doing direct studies on various forms of wildlife that exist in the wetland. There's a substantial population of shrews and voles and birds, and even elk are commonly seen down in the wetland, especially in the morning. It's a great place to work, actually.
Now, as a scientist, you're trying to make a model of an incredibly complex, geologically complex system. How do you know how accurate you are? I mean, one of the things that you and I have talked about is that the drilling methods themselves have sometimes had created errors because some of the materials you use in drilling absorb chromium, so the numbers you get are not accurate.
Mm-hmm. Well, with respect to the monitoring wells themselves, there are ways by using, by looking for indicators of what we were describing earlier as background conditions in the groundwater. We understand what those are, and we have a way of looking at those constituents of the groundwater in the monitoring wells that are part of an investigation like chromium, seeing how well they represent the background conditions of non-contaminant type constituents. And if those look like they're pretty reliable, then you make the leap that your contaminant data is also good, acknowledging that there are situations, in fact at the laboratory, where some of the residual effects of drilling have created some problems. But we'll factor that in absolutely as a part of the chromium investigation, and certainly not overrepresent data that could be problematic. But we believe that in the vicinity of the chromium investigation, the data that we're getting is quite reliable.
So what happens now? I mean, you're doing this public meeting on Wednesday night. It's called Groundwater Update at Fuller Lodge.
A great title.
Well, it's a very scientific title. From 5:30 to 8:30, and people can show up. The point is just to simply inform the public of the stuff you're talking about right now?
Yeah, that's correct. The information on the Chromium Project has certainly been out in a number of forums. It's been in the paper quite a bit, certainly in the Los Alamos Monitor, one of the local papers there, and even here in the Santa Fe papers. But this is really an attempt to kind of create a more open public forum that's very exchange-oriented, very interactive. And we're holding it intentionally this time in Los Alamos, where the people who are drinking water from that particular aquifer have an opportunity to hear firsthand where we're at with our investigations, what the issues are, and the first part of the meeting is actually about an hour or so of kind of an open forum of poster session, as we call it, where we'll have graphical displays of a lot of this work up on easels, and we'll be around just to interact with people at that point, and then more just oral presentations after that. So,
have you done many presentations like this before? Did the public tend to show up?
You know, it's really quite variable. Sometimes you get remarkably good turnout, and other times not so much. And I don't know if that's about how it's advertised or whether people would rather be out in their gardens or what, but it's really, you never really know going into this. And we expect a decent turnout here, and hopefully people listening to the program here will be inspired to come and attend.
People have been concerned about this, I take it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have to assume so, although we don't get a barrage of calls from people, and certainly there are ways that people could contact us and seek more information about it. And we don't actually get calls from the community. And we work quite actively with the utilities managers in Los Alamos Canyon to make sure they're very aware of where we're at in our investigations. They own the water supply system, and it's ultimately their responsibility to communicate direct issues associated with the water supply system to the residents of the county.
Right.
And so far, again, because the concentrations haven't appeared different looking than background, they felt that they have not been compelled to send out any kind of issues of concern.
Danny Katzman, thanks so much for being with us
on
the
cafe. Thanks for the opportunity. Thank you.